Michael Knowles takes on the red-pilled community on the subject of marriage as he gets into a debate with Pearl Davis on the subject. A lot of people think Pearl scored the W on this, but since there is no such thing as really winning debates, I think it's important to revisit the conversation and just ask ourselves, on which side of the debate does reason really lie? And since the future of the human species kind of is predicated upon healthy families, I think it's important for us to discuss. So we'll do that and more today on Indie Thinker. Welcome to the show. My name is Reed Huberman, and I've got a great one prepared for you today, as always. Now, I am watching some of you, and I have noticed that you watch the show, but then later you forget to subscribe. So just friendly reminder here. You can subscribe by mashing the little button down below and then clicking that little bell to be notified when new episodes drop, because you don't want to miss a single one. If this show has ever been a benefit to you, if it's ever impacted your life, inspired you, made you a better human being, maybe even made your board game playing skills a little bit better, then I highly want to encourage you to make sure to subscribe to the show. And then you can also go one step further by signing up for our newsletter. That's the place where you can get Indie Thinker exclusive extras. You can also see the full-length trailer to our brand new film, Fatherless. And you can also find ways to support that film so that we can finish this thing, take it out of pre-production, and move into full-scale production on it. If you believe that the makeup of the nuclear family, the absence of fathers in homes, really does make a difference in society, well, then we can do something together about it. You can support us and so much more by signing up for our newsletter. You can go to the link on the screen now to do that, or you can go to the description of this podcast where you can find a Linktree link that will take you to subscription for our newsletter. We thank you in advance for doing it. If there is a place of deep insight and wisdom on TV today, it has to be The View. Not
only the Holocaust isn't about race.
The ladies there are constantly dispensing great information that each and every one of you need for your life. But then if there is a number two, you know, directly under that godsend of The View, it would be the Drew Barrymore show, where just recently Drew and Marie Osmond came together to have a little chit chat about the power and the beauty of divorce. Here's what Drew had to say about it. She said, "I had so much shame around divorce, and for some reason, something happened. And I said, I'm no longer willing to feel this way. And it just lifted from me." It's magic, Drew. When you totally disregard responsibility for things, all of a sudden, the responsibility, the pressure of that responsibility just flies away magically. Barrymore went on and she said, "I just thought when you get a divorce, you're saving the precious commodity we have on this planet, which is only our time." Now, I know what you're thinking already. How do these people get these shows? It's probably a different show for a different day, but I would argue that mediocrity and incompetence in society, even in our highest places of intel or those places where you need people who are truly sophisticated and capable, when you see incompetence in those areas, perhaps it is one of the greatest arguments for the necessity of a transcendent God, a being that is bigger than us, that we can put our faith in, that is more stable than the things that we will create here on this earth, which are almost always laden with kind of a bit of incompetence. I would also add to that maybe just two other things that are real important beyond just recognizing the obvious that people who do not deserve television shows get shows all the time. And I would just say this, that if we look at Drew's life and we look at her words, we understand how the divorce statistics in America look as horrible as they actually do, because people like Drew Barrymore and her other friends in Hollywood have absolutely skewed the statistics for divorce in America so that things look actually way worse than they are. I can prove that to you because Drew herself has had three failed marriages and divorced three times. In 1994, Drew married Jeremy Thomas, and after 6 weeks of dating, they split up 3 weeks later. In 2001, she married comedian Tom Green. He filed for divorce just months later. In 2012, Barrymore married Will Koppelman. Then they brought two daughters in the world, and then 4 years later divorced. So all I'm saying with that is just simply that Drew is the kind of person who gives marriage a bad name by how many frivolous divorces that she's had constantly. And I think that there is a little bit of a narrative within that story, simply that we need to be careful what kind of information we're taking in as it as it comes to marriage and make sure that the information we're getting actually gives us an accurate display of what marriage is and what it's supposed to be. And that kind of brings us to the second thing. Going to Drew Barrymore to get any information about marriage would be like going to Lizzo and getting information about strength and conditioning, or maybe going to Dylan Mulvaney and trying to get information about your menstrual cycle. In other words, she is not somebody that we would trust to faithfully represent what marriage is supposed to be at all. And that's where I enter into the conversation, the debate between Pearl and Michael, because both of them are going to be talking about marriage. One of them is not married, one of them is. And the question arises, should we listen to the person who is not married detail for us why it is important that people not get married, or should we listen to the man who has been married for more than 10 years tell us about the virtues and the power and the importance of marriage? Well, I'll let you decide for yourself, but I do have some thoughts on that. So let's jump into the conversation.
I moved to London to play volleyball. And essentially what happened was I started reacting to red pill content. Okay. And I didn't understand why men were complaining about dating. You know, I kept hearing like men complaining about dating. So I ended up doing a panel show where I interviewed 1,000 women about dating and relationships.
By the way, you're going to hear about this panel show very often in this conversation. It's going to be treated as somehow authoritative. But just wanted to tune you into that.
And I came to the point where I could see where the guys were coming from. I had a second question, too. I wanted to know, why don't men want to get married anymore? You know, I grew up in a two-parent home. My parents have been married for 30 years. I didn't understand it. And I came to find out that when men have children in this country, you know—
In this country, meaning the U.S.
In the United States, you know, they're not legally entitled to their children. And I think it's the biggest issue that we're facing right now. Single mother homes, they lead to school shooters. You're more likely to commit crimes, drug deals. Every problem in society comes from single mother homes. And so, you know, what I found is that men are not getting married not because they don't want relationships, but because they fear divorce.
And divorce rates, I guess it's not that divorce rates are skyrocketing, in part because fewer people are getting married now. But you observed that divorce is... One could say is at the very heart of the political problem because marriage, the family, is the fundamental political unit. So you crack that up, you're going to crack up society.
Yeah. So, you know, I have a documentary coming out called Why Don't Men Want to Get Married Anymore, where it really dives into the problems as to why the institution of marriage is failing. For example, the Tender Years Doctrine. Do you know what that is?
The Tender Years? No.
That assumes that the mother is the best one for the child under the age of 7. In some states, it extends to 16.
Yeah.
That's an openly sexist law. That's openly sexist.
But what do you mean by sexist? Because, you know, sometimes people say sexist, and I, you know, if they're referring to real misogyny or something, I don't like that. But if they're saying men and women are different, I certainly
Well, they are different, right? Yeah. But what evidence do we have that the mother is the best one with the children?
Well,
the kids are the most likely to be abused by the mother, not the father, by the mother.
That's a little unclear because, for starters, you know, as you just acknowledged, the children are much more likely to be with the mother, not only in the case of divorce, but also in the case of a married couple.
But why?
Daddy's at work.
But why?
Why so are the kids way
the,
more likely
the way
to be
the laws,
with
the mother? The way the laws are set up, it punishes men for being traditional. If you're a traditional...
When I say kids are more likely to be with their mothers, I just mean because even in a traditional... family.
Right.
I, daddy, am off at work right now and mommy is home with the kids.
But, so what's your point with that?
My point is that if, and the statistics are a little unclear about this. There was a number from HHS in 2009 showed that women are much more likely to abuse or neglect their children. There's another number from last year from, I think it was the National Child Abuse and Neglect Data Set or something like that, which found that it's a little closer to equal. Women still have a slight edge on abuse, but it's close to sexual parity. But then when you factor in...
Not the biological dad. That includes stepdads. Not the biological father.
No, that's biological father.
No, it is.
Which data set are you referring to?
Well, they've done comprehensive studies over the last 100 years.
What do you mean by they? Like, I'm referring to a very specific data set.
Okay, go ahead.
So in that very specific data set, that would contradict the 2009 numbers from HHS, but nevertheless, it would still prove your point, which is that the women are slightly more likely. But then I guess my point is, right, the women in marriage and outside of marriage are much more likely to be with children all of the time.
Right,
so
there
the parity is almost
you would see
surprising.
The abuse numbers go down as women have spent less time with children.
So the fun thing with the serpent is, how does a serpent talk? What, and not only that, but why is the serpent's punishment to crawl on its belly?
One of the biggest sales ever. 30 beef sticks for just $30. Try for $1 each. 6 grams of protein, 0 grams of sugar.
So in the last 50 years, women have worked more.
You're saying that children are more likely to be abused in a traditional family with mother and father, or you're saying single father and single mother?
Women are the most likely the ones to abuse the child. And even if you include, you think abortion's murder, right?
Yeah.
So one out of three women's had an abortion. I've seen some numbers that say one out of four, but the point is still the same. If one out of four men committed murder, we would
sure.
all be.
Though, yeah, I mean, abortion is murder, but also, you know, there's a lot that goes into that because there are
and so I just couldn't. Go ahead.
Well, you know, when we point to an issue like abortion, you know, obviously, yeah, that's that is murder. It's not only morally synonymous; it's the same thing. But then also, you know, the male abortionists are involved in the murder. The male legislators who pass.
If I hire a hitman, I'm still responsible.
Sure, but so is the hitman. He goes to jail too.
Right, but there's far more women that are hiring a hitman than men performing the act.
Well, so I guess in every abortion, it's a woman who's procuring one.
Exactly,
right.
that's my point. And so my point is that law is openly sexist.
It's sexist, but men and women are different. So shouldn't it be sexist? Meaning, when a little baby calls out, a little baby is calling out for mommy, not daddy. Now, I'm not saying this is good. I think divorce is unacceptable in pretty much every circumstance. But if there is going to be a divorce, it would seem natural for a little baby to be with the mother rather than the father.
Even if you look at infanticide, it's almost unheard of for men to ever commit it. It's almost 100% the mother.
Well, that's
my point.
That's contradicted by one study.
I don't think it's right that men are not entitled to their children. It's 50% their DNA. It's 50% their child. Why are they not entitled to 50% custody?
All right, so Pearl does have a point there. The legal system is skewed toward the mother. It probably should be. There's an argument for why, but it shouldn't be blindly skewed toward the mother, and there could be some reforms there. However, I don't think she's necessarily proving her point that women are somehow uniquely bad right now and shouldn't be given their kids because somehow statistics show us that women are more likely to kill their children. By the way, if we think abortion is infanticide, and it is, then I would say just as much as the child is 50% of the father in a custody battle, it's 50% of the father in the abortion scenario. But I work at a pregnancy resource center, and I'll tell you what happens almost always. Very often, the men are passive, and they believe the my body, my choice mantra nonsense, and they say, well, it's her decision. Whenever there is a pro-life-minded man in the situation in an unplanned pregnancy, with few exceptions, the baby is almost always saved and allowed to see the light of day and breathe its first breath outside of its mother's womb. Very often when a man takes the lead, that infanticide statistic that Pearl tried to quote is totally the opposite. So let's step back for a moment and just kind of see what she's trying to say. Essentially, I think she's making the argument that the quality of women today does not support the commitment that marriage takes. Look at all the statistics about women and how awful they are, and therefore, a man should not marry a woman because they're bad, or something like that. I think that's a fair assessment of what's been said thus far. And the problem with that is that this is a little bit of like the chicken and the egg argument. So, are women bad and therefore men don't want to marry them, or are bad men not in the picture and therefore impacting the way in which a woman lives and who that woman is? And is the absence of the leadership of a man impacting the quality of women? I think undeniably the answer is yes to that. So we could argue back and forth and maybe even frame that a little bit differently, but I think essentially that's what's going on here. And the problem with the way Pearl is arguing is that she is inserting a narrative of sorts that I think is best situated with this kind of analogy. So Howard Zinn wrote
A People's History of the United States.
In it, he posited the existence, the mythical existence, not of leprechauns, unicorns, or transgender women, But he posited the idea of the noble savage, that if it weren't for white colonialist and probably white colonialist Christians coming to these places where they colonized, these noble savages would have gone on to live peaceful and beautiful lives, and they were minding their own business until these bloodthirsty whites came in and tried to kill everyone. It totally denies the fact that actually what these tribes were doing to each other is cannibalizing each other, eating each other's hearts, sacrificing each other, and constantly warring between each other for land. I bring that up just simply to say this, that my problem with Pearl's argument is she seems to be positing these wonderful, fantastic men who don't leave their spouses and their partners with children to raise on their own, these men who are totally faithful to women and never cheat or anything like that. And I don't think that that really bears witness to what's really happening in the vast majority of marriages all around America. It's a hodgepodge. It's not that simple. You can't paint with broad strokes here, but if you can, I don't think it favors Pearl's way of looking at things. And very often, this is what I hear coming from the red-pilled community, is that all these men are so amazing, and if it weren't for these women. And it's really just not that simple. But I do believe that there is a truism that is way more true than what Pearl is talking about here. And it's this, that men were created to be leaders. And so I would just say this, if you're a man, go be a leader. Men still have all the necessary means, even with the state's influence, even with divorce laws and all of that stuff, recognizing those things maybe aren't what they should be. Men still have the ability to procure happy and healthy families if they really want it. Now, listen, I could make excuses for myself and for other men. I could tell you that the reason the divorce statistics are so high and the reason the state of marriage is so broken is because of feminism and because of the welfare state. I could argue that the proliferation of porn and OnlyFans is destroying the makeup of families. And until we fix that, yada, 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 divorce laws, the dating pool filled with hoes and all that stuff. I could make all of those arguments. But still, acknowledging all of those things are a problem. I can still tell you that it is up to courageous men to quit complaining and blaming other people and to take responsibility. See, the argument that Pearl is making totally takes away the faculty of men to be men, which is kind of a problem. I still believe that men stepping up to the plate and being men are the cure for any of the things that Pearl will talk about throughout this conversation. So I'll just tell you, I've been a pastor for 24 years now, and I see churches chock full of godly men and godly women. There's plenty of good women to choose from if you want to get a good woman. And it's time for boys to start being men and quit complaining about the dating pool or to make any other kind of excuses. So I guess what I'm saying to you is go to church. Yes, it's overly simplistic like many of Pearl's arguments, but mine has a little bit deeper of a truth to it. Statistics will tell you not that you are immune from divorce if you're a Christian or you found your wife in church or any of that stuff, but I am telling you that the likelihood of a person having a much happier and healthy marriage if they are aligned ideologically, if they have the same belief system, if they care about the same thing, have the same moral basis and value system, have some of these things that matter so very much before you jump into the sack with a person. If you have these things in common, you are much more likely to have a happy and healthy marriage. And that's what all of the statistics tell you, that Christians have happier and healthy marriages. Now, I get it. There's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. So Pearl's going to use statistics too. And I'm just simply turning around the favor and just saying that if you want to have a good and happy and healthy marriage, you can do that. It's still within your power to do it, especially if you're a man. All right, let's go to the next clip.
So then, you know, I don't mean to blame the victim here if I'm talking about the men, but it would seem to me if you don't want to get divorced, not marrying a liberal woman is a good place to start. Mm-hmm. If the more liberal women are, the more likely they are to divorce. It's almost like a truism, right? It's like saying the more likely a woman is to support divorce, the more likely she is to divorce. Mm-hmm. Well, then why would a man marry a woman who would support divorce?
What percent of women do you think are marriageable?
What do you mean by marriageable?
No tattoos, no debt, not overweight, doesn't openly hate men. It's not the majority, Michael.
What's the number?
These are confirmed by an actuary. It's less than 5%.
Which actuary? What study is
it? It's called It's a World Without Men. It's
a study or it's a blog or a book or What is a world
without
money?
It's a book. It's a book. And they go through the numbers that are confirmed by an actuary.
So I saw that book.
But you know this, Michael, even in real life. You go on the Whatever podcast.
Yeah.
You go, I mean, you see Fresh and Fit Miami. It's not like, and I've interviewed 1,000 women. 1,000. Yeah, yeah. I've interviewed Christian women. I've interviewed Catholic women.
So I saw that
book. I've been on the other side of divorce.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've seen men that did the right thing.
But I'm skeptical of your number here because,
it's a
crazy world. The women have crazy colored hair. They have tattoos. They do crazy stuff. But I saw that book. Mm-hmm. Maybe you had mentioned it or someone on the internet mentioned it. And I didn't know, was it a study? Is it a this or is it a that? And it's this book by a blogger who
he's an economist.
So I read the book. I would encourage people to take a look at the book. Okay. There, I open up the book. The first sentence of that book, there is one mistaken quotation and three mm-hmm. grammatical errors in the first mm-hmm. sentence. And then I looked for the 5% number. Mm-hmm. The 5% figure appears nowhere in the book. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not saying that the world is teeming with women who are traditional and,
right.
you know.
Would you agree it's the minority?
Who are marriageable?
The minority. Even if we look at just overweight. 70% of women. Sometimes I think you guys are so out of touch.
I don't think it's
70%. You want a fat wife? It's like, come on. No, guys. This is what you're telling men to sign up for?
Wife. What I'm telling
them.
That's
my point. It's not the majority. And when is the last time you dated? Like 10 years? You've been married for a while.
So
sometimes you talk and I just think you're a bit out of touch with
No, that's fair. You're saying,
you know,
I never did any of these things.
Correct. And I'm saying I've interviewed 1,000 women. I could give you examples in real life too. I mean, that's a ton of people, Michael.
Sure.
So,
sure. I have no doubt that the dating pool is difficult now. But
the problem is that the state is the legal enforcement arm.
Well, that's by definition.
Correct. So there is no way for a man to get married in 2024 without being entered into the state contract.
But that's always
and so true. And so I understand, but I understand men's hesitation when the quality of women has gone down.
But what if,
I don't tell men not to get married or like what to do. I think every man has to decide for themselves. But I don't think you're going to win a lot of support. Or I think you have to understand the problem in order to come up with the solution.
But so you are telling men, at the very least, you're observing that it is not advisable today in 2024 to get married.
I would say that every man has to pick for himself. Okay. But I think objectively, if me and you sign a contract and one of us is paid to leave, you would never sign that business deal.
I did, right? If you're saying that's the state of marriage now, I did get married, therefore mm-hmm. I did sign it.
I will tell you my impression of the conversation thus far is that I'm surprised to see Pearl is not really it's not good thinker, but it's not a precise thinker, I suppose. She's using a bunch of statistics and then making these conclusions based upon these things that I don't think the statistics really merit. But needless to say, her last comment about marriage being a contract, would you engage in that kind of contract? Well, first of all, let me just be really clear with you. That marriage is not a business deal. And if you're approaching it as a business deal, you're probably doing it wrong and you're setting yourself up for failure. I only make mention of that is because there are a lot of people who think that it is and will even say something like this to me. Oh, Reed, you're just not being practical. Sure, you can use your spirituality and your religion to try to help you with your marriage, but at the end of the day, if you find yourself in a divorce, then you'll wish you would have been a little bit more practical. All I'm going to tell you is all of that practicality is setting you up for an understanding of marriage, or at least shows that you have an understanding of marriage that is absolutely not healthy, and then you shouldn't be surprised when you have a divorce. And a lot of people say, well, I didn't know that that woman was that way when I married her, and I was deceived. This is almost always just completely false. That woman was that way when you married her, or and if she wasn't, it could be that you potentially have a part in making her that way. So if you thought you married Dorothy, you got the Wicked Witch of the West, you may want to ask yourself, what did I do to potentially make that happen? But the second thing here is that even if marriage was a contract, which it's not a business contract at the end of the day, it's a spiritual institution that in principle, is the means by which children are made and educated, and secondarily, the development of intimacy and love between two people. So if it is a contract, you are signing on for those things. And therefore, the contract would read not just, hey, do you want to sign on to a business that has a 50% failure rate and then have everything taken from you? It's just dishonest. The contract should read something like this. Do you want to enter into an agreement that will procure for you the only means by which you can create a legacy for yourself that will be passed down through your seed for generations? And do you want to procure for yourself the only means by which anyone will truly care for you in your old age? Trust me, it's not going to be in the nursing home. This is why I really don't like the red pill community on these deep issues. They don't seem to be playing the long game. They don't seem to be looking past their nose. They're just trying to use statistics to make their point for them rather than to be honest about what the institution of marriage is actually doing. And in order to do that, you must play the long game. You must look at life beyond your temporal moment and whatever the statistics may tell you right now, and look at the ends and the means of marriage. What is it really meant to do at the end of the day? And very often the red pill community comes off as progressive in these ways. They can have the veneer of conservatism because they're standing up for values that really do matter, where the progressive movement has none. But often they find themselves falling into the trap of progressivism because they suffer from presentism. They're just looking at what's happening now and forgetting what the future looks like or what the purpose long-term of things actually are. I'll put it to you like this. I believe the propensity to forsake our mortality, to quit thinking about our mortality, to even deny it, and to not think about the future and to avoid it at all costs is a very progressive thing to do, most often because people don't want to think about their own mortality. They don't want to think about their legacy and all of those things because then, if they actually start thinking about those things, they'll have to get serious about thinking about God. It will push them into thinking about eternal life and the meaning of life and what we're all really here for and what will my life be about when it's all said and done. See, all of that pushes you clearly into the camp of the religious. This is why progressives try to avoid it at all cost. They don't want to think about their mortality because they want to be gods in their own eyes and they think that they're in control of everything. They don't ever defer to a sovereignty that may be outside of themselves. And if Pearl was really willing to grapple with this, she wouldn't just tell us she's Catholic. She would actually understand the goal of marriage and the means of marriage and how important it is to a society. And it would push her beyond all of the objections that I think she presently has right now. And it definitely would have pushed her beyond kind of the flawed structure that she just made with her contract argument. All right, let's jump into one final clip.
Okay, well, congratulations, but I think a lot of men are going to be hesitant to do that.
And you're saying it's rational for them to be hesitant.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's advisable.
No, not advisable.
But rational.
Every man, like, okay. I'll give you an example. I'm not here. I think men have had enough of women telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling men to do anything. But I think your situation is going to be completely different than the average Joe making $45,000 a year. If your marriage goes south, you have the money to afford lawyers.
I have the money, but I'm going to lose
money,
half money.
Do you think you're in the same position as the average man making $45,000 a year? The answer is no. I
don't think it's because of my money, though. Look, when I got married, I didn't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But now I have more money. But I think there's a bigger distinction here.
Okay.
Which is, I am of a religious view and practice mm-hmm. that does not recognize the reality of divorce. Mm-hmm. Not only do we discourage it, I'm a mackerel snapping papist, a member of the Catholic faith.
I'm Catholic too.
You're Catholic also.
I'm also Catholic.
So, marvelous news.
Yeah, yeah. Catholics are not immune to divorce. I have seen it. I've seen people getting married for the second time. They still get communion, and the number of annulments is going up.
That's not licit.
I know. Yeah. But it doesn't matter because it happens all the time.
But you can.
And
you know,
so that's no, like it, saying, no, it's like totally. Saying,
you know, I see someone who calls himself.
We have a record. We have a record number of annulments this year in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is getting more lit. You see the Pope. And I think we could agree on this stuff.
The Pope for all of the liberal statements that have appeared in the press under his name, The Pope is generally pretty good on matters of sex and marriage. He's pretty clear. When you say, you know, Catholics get divorced, it has happened. There's a distinction between an annulment.
It's around, I looked it up before this, it's around 25, 35.
So that's how, yeah.
It's around 35%. And so that's the national not a small average. Percentage.
What's the national average? Like 45% roughly? Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I 2024, it was 50.
Okay, so.
I know everyone splits hairs over like the 5, 10%, but regardless, 50, it's not small.
So what that means then is that if you're a man, and I totally grant that dating pool's tough and the economy's tough and the divorce courts are terrible and divorce laws are terrible, I grant
But they
all
should
that.
Sign up anyway.
Okay, so if I am to kind of synthesize the debate thus far, I would say exceptions to the rule do not undermine the rule. Pearl's got a lot of exceptions. But she's forgetting what the rule is. Marriage in principle is ordered toward beginning in the education of children, regardless of the state's interference of this, or the quality of the dating pool, or any other gripe or exceptions that you may have. There has never been and never will be a better idea for the continuance of a healthy society other than marriage. Why do you think the Marxists are and the postmodernists are so interested in the destruction of the family? In other words, you screw with it at your own peril, Pearl. If after all the statistics and all of the arguments that you've made, you'll ultimately land back to the reality of marriage, it's time for us to grow up and figure out how to make marriage work. Your only other option is to go the way of Pearl and cry about the institution and then abstain from it. But what does she think will happen if we create a society where men are not getting married to women? People are going to continue to have sex. It's just the reality of life. And then, therefore, it will create a bunch of kids, inevitably, without parents. It's already happening. Then the promulgation of Big Pharma will kick in, because we'll also have parents who have kids and unplanned pregnancies or unwanted pregnancies, and then they'll want to kill those kids, which will only incentivize Planned Parenthood to keep on trying to destroy the nuclear family. And then, if those parents are brave enough to have a child without being married, then ultimately we'll have a bunch of kids running around without fathers, and then Big Pharma kicks in again, because now ADHD medicine will be necessary to force down the throat of these small children, especially young boys, because they don't have a father in the home. Furthermore, you won't just be sowing into Big Pharma and their agenda to destroy the nuclear family, but you'll also be joining the promulgation of porn. So men maybe say, well, we don't want to get married and we don't want to have kids, so I'll just sit at home and do OnlyFans. And then that will lead to birth rate declines. And then the human dies out at worst, and at best, a bunch of kids are without dads. No big deal at all. I will agree that much of what Pearl says is right, and it gains attention because very few people are willing to say it. But that doesn't mean she is right in the most important ways. Here's one glaring issue with Pearl that causes her to be wrong about the most important aspects of marriage. She's not married and never has been. So my question should be legitimate. Should we listen to a person about marriage who has no concept of it at all? Now, I understand. I have a problem with identity arguments, too. I hate it when people say, well, you've never dealt with drugs, so you can't talk to me about drug addiction. Well, I can tell you some pretty basic facts about drug addiction. One, bad. Two, don't do it. So these arguments are really horrible when they become race-based. Like, you're white, so you can't tell me what you think about this issue. Like, really? I've been pulled over by the police, too. And by the way, every single interaction that I've had with the police has been negative when I've been pulled over. I got pulled over one time, by the way, and the guy asked me what I did for a living. When I told him I was a Christian minister, he said, yeah, I used to be one of those, too, and then handed me a ticket as angrily as possible and then walked away. So I get it. I don't like identity arguments either. I don't like people trying to take away your right to speak on a subject just simply because you don't have a certain set of experiences. And the question is, well, what kind of experiences do you need in order to weigh in on this topic? I will just tell you this, that a black person and a white person have enough common experiences that you cannot differentiate whether or not that person is experiencing this simply because they are black. But I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, a person who is not married definitely does not have the same kind of experiences I do. So I can't help but say that we shouldn't listen to a woman who has never been married tell us specific isolated truths about how marriages sometimes don't go right and then treat them as though they are universal. And at the end of the day, let me just argue one simple fact. On your tombstone, it's not going to say avoided marriage, had 2 million subscribers on YouTube. It's not going to say had a podcast. You and everybody else. That's not going to be on our tombstone. What will be on our tombstone is loving father, devoted husband, something to that nature, because the institution of marriage really is, at the end of the day, the thing that will mean the most to us. It is the thing that consistently grabs me back to reality and grounds me in this earth. When I think about the things that will matter, when it's all said and done, it has nothing to do with my professional career. It has to do with my two boys and my beautiful, wonderful wife. If you don't have that, I wouldn't expect you to believe that that is what makes life significant and meaningful. Since she doesn't have a kid and doesn't have a husband, I don't expect her to understand that in the long game, you can avoid marriage if you want to, but ultimately you are missing out on one of the things that truly make life significant. And at the same rate, this is why we shouldn't be getting marriage advice from Pearl. It would be much better suited if we got it from the people who are doing it well. All right, that's all the time I have for today. Thanks so much for watching. If this podcast was helpful to you, then don't forget to comment down below. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and go with God.